Greetings to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, to friends, students, and allies scattered across the planet, and anyone else who cares to listen. This is your navigator, John Lash, recording on the 2nd of May, 2013. This is nav briefing number 62, and the title is Gaian Syncopation. Just a small correction before I begin. I played some music as a preface to a recent briefing. It was called In My Secret Life, from an album by Leonard Cohen. I mistakenly said that the album was The Future, which I believe came out in around 1999, but actually it is from the following album, 10 New Songs, which came out sometime later. It's notable that Leonard Cohen is one poet, singer, musician who appears to benefit from the influence of a muse. I understand that when he wrote and performed the songs in The Future, he was under the influence of Rebecca De Mornay. And it appears that for the subsequent album from which I took that piece, he was under the influence of a lovely dark-skinned muse who also sings on and accompanies him on some of the songs, particularly on the song called Boogie Street. So to return to the hot topic of the moment, the last briefing on Chinnamasta's glory introduced the notion that having set the initial conditions of correction in 3 years, the Aeon Sophia will then be occupied for over 200 years in bringing all of the biological and instinctual, natural, geological, and atmospheric processes of the planet into synchronization. And her aim, as far as I can understand it, as the one who reads her intents and purposes to the her designs and purposes to the best of my ability, her intention would be to bring all of those diverse factors of life back into synergy and back into harmony with each other, including the human species, that luminous child, the Anthropos. So we have a role of collaborating in this great undertaking that Sophia now faces, the great challenge of her correction once the initial conditions have been set. And as I indicated in the last briefing, the self-beheading Mahavidya called Chinnamasta, whom you may now call Mirita, oversees this process. That is her glory. Her glory is to step out of the cyclic schema of Dakini instruction, but not completely. She does not abandon her special instructions, which arise periodically when she comes on shift. She simply forgoes them to give a more general access instruction to humanity, so that humanity can then, or those among the human tribes who elect to do so, can then take part in this massive and long-term process of synchronization. So how can this process, which will extend for the next 200 and so years to the end of the Kalpa in the spring of 2216, how can this process be described in more detail in a way that would be instructive and helpful and inspiring? It's my objective to do so in the course of this briefing. You know, Socrates in the Gorgias made a very simple point. He was having a discussion, a dialectic encounter with a sophist, and the encounter really wasn't getting anywhere. It wasn't getting off the ground at the beginning. And I paraphrase here, but Socrates said in his deceptively disarming manner, well, look, why don't we just, neither of us really knows what we're talking about here. I forget what the topic of the Gorgias was. So Socrates says, neither of us really knows what we're talking about. So let's just set some terms provisionally just so we can have a conversation, you know. So this notion of setting provisional terms is extremely helpful, and I'm going to use that notion right now. I'm sure all of you listening to these words have heard the term positive feedback and negative feedback. Now, be aware that the use of that term in common and ordinary language, the loose use of that term, is nothing at all like the scientific and technical use of the terms. Positive feedback, for instance, if you get positive feedback on something that you've done, say you have a dance performance, you do a dance performance, or say you work in the garden, or you do anything whatsoever, and you look to some other person to tell you how you've done, you're looking for positive feedback, that is to say, approval, reinforcement. But in the technical term of the word, sense of the term, excuse me, that is not at all what positive feedback is. So let me read a definition from the internet. Positive feedback is a process in which the effects of a small disturbance on a system include an increase in the magnitude of the perturbation. That is, A produces more of B, which in turn produces more of A. In contrast, the system in which the results of a change act to reduce or counteract it has negative feedback. Mathematically, positive feedback is defined as a positive loop gain around a feedback loop. Okay, so forth and so on. I have always found this term, positive feedback, to be unfortunate. What it describes is an event that can be illustrated, for instance, in a famous example of a bridge that fell apart. I think it was in Tasmania. It was a suspension bridge, and the winds whipped through the straits where the bridge had been erected. And the winds were not powerful enough to blow the bridge apart or blow it off its foundations, far from that. But the winds hit the bridge in such a manner that they initiated a series of small disturbances, vibratory ripples, like waves running along the suspension bridge. And that rippling effect of the wind, although the absolute power of the wind was small, the rippling effect set up a further effect, which fed into a further effect. I guess this is why they call it positive feedback. And then again into a further effect, and the sum total of all those effects was to produce a massive disturbance that caused the bridge to disintegrate. And that is called positive feedback. But on the other hand, negative feedback presumably means when a system feeds into itself in such a manner that it does not cause that system to be disrupted or to disintegrate. So all we need to know is that positive feedback denotes catastrophic disintegration of a system. If you have positive feedback going or operating somewhere in your body, then your whole organism is going to fall apart. So, I think I proposed somewhere in metahistory, I can never find anything on the site, of course. You have my sympathies in that respect. But somewhere along the way, maybe it was in the lexicon, years ago, I proposed two simple terms and user-friendly terms to replace positive feedback and negative feedback. Doing so, I used the concepts of, or prefixes of dis and sin. So the prefix dys represents something bad, something that's going wrong. So you have a dystopia. A dystopic society is a society in which everything has gone wrong. It's a nightmare vision of the future. We are currently living in a dystopic society. So I pose the word dystropic. Tropos means to turn or shift or move toward. For instance, heliotropism represents the natural phenomena in which plants turn toward the sun. Heliotropism. So trope is turning, dis is a negative disintegrative turning. So forget about positive feedback. Let's call it a dystropic event, a dystropic phenomenon. Equally, on the other side of the coin, rather than using the problematical term of negative feedback for something that is actually good for a system, we'll say that the negative feedback, so-called, is the syntropic event, S-Y-N, meaning leading to synergy, leading to the cooperation and interaction of all parts for the benefit of the whole. So there is dystropic feedback or dystropic activity and syntropic activity. Now you recall that when I put out the invitation to the GNE, I asked you to observe, to come up onto the navigation deck with me, look over my shoulder as I plot out the course of the mothership, learn by observing how I use the various tools of navigation. But I also asked you, from the unique vantage point that you have on the navigation deck, you're not below decks with the passengers, to observe certain events that transpire in the course of this journey. And at that time, you may recall, there was a lot of talk about these anomalous sounds, these sounds coming from the earth or from the sky. And I invited you to the GNE to observe such anomalies. Now, a little more than just going on to 2 years into the experiment, I think you would agree that we've observed a fair amount of anomalies. And some of these anomalies, I would say, portray the character of seriously dystropic events. That is to say, they are things happening in the natural world, happening to the earth itself, such as sinkholes, happening to various creatures, such as the disappearance of species, dropping of birds out of the sky, fish kills, dolphins and whales going off course, happening in the atmosphere, and happening to humanity and within the human psyche itself. In all these realms, some of the anomalies that can be observed and which you have observed can be said to have serious dystropic and catastrophic outcome. And the most recent examples that I would give of this would be the massive sinkholes that are appearing and the collapsing of the salt domes. Of course, also, there is an indication of the tremendous escalation of volcanic activity over the last 2 or so years. Much of that volcanic activity being under sea. Remember, the mothership is a sail steamer. So maybe her steam engines under the sea are overheating. Maybe they're going into a dystropic phase, because it would appear that we on this planet are very close to a massive and irreversible dystropic event. One of the consistent and recurrent speculations pointing to that event, or what that event might be, is the enormous amount of talk about the Madrid fault line. And there's a very real possibility that the eastern third of the United States would be split away from the western two-thirds of the continent by a massive dystropic event. That is to say, it would be an accumulation of small effects that build and build on each other and get out of control and eventually reach a point when there is sudden and irreversible catastrophic upheaval. And you don't have to be Nostradamus. Well, you don't have to channel the Pleiades or listen to the ETs to see the high probability of this coming. Another example of a possibility of a massive dystopic event in the making. Not possibility, certainly. There is a massive dystopic event in the making with the release of methane along the Siberian ice shelf on the eastern coast of Russia. Okay. How do we now interpret this massive display of dystopia in terms of the correction of the Aeon Sophia? How does it fit in to the scheme of things regarding her correction as we understand it so far? Well, very simply, it shows you what it is that she needs to correct. I mean, it's a little bit paradoxical here, isn't it? You can look at these imminent dystopic events as phenomena of nature falling apart and thereby needing to be corrected, needing to be healed, needing to be restored and taken back to synergy, taken back to syntropic activity. And so these events are, think about this very carefully and hold this in your mind with the subtlety I now propose. These events are both the measure of what she needs to correct and the measure of her correction. So, that's pretty clear to see. And I am certain that from this point on, in the remaining months that transpire until March 2014, there is likely to be a massive increase in dystrophic events in nature. And you can observe these and record these. That is part of your task and part of the adventure that you've undertaken. Now, in a previous briefing, I've spoken of the factor of sattva in the cosmic order. Sattva. You know, there are three principles in Asian physics, if you will, and Asian paraphysics. These principles are considered to operate equally and concomitantly in the human psyche, in human consciousness, and in the natural world. And they are called rajas, tamas, and sattva. And sattva is the only one that concerns us here at the moment. It represents the rhythmic or balancing element in all processes. So there's a sattva in your body. And the sattva of your body is demonstrated by the rhythms of your body. And the rhythms of your body are diverse. You have the rhythms of your head, the brain frequencies, as they're called, the brain waves. You have the rhythm, of course, of your lungs, of your breathing, and the rhythm of your pulse, which the Steinerians call the rhythm circulatory system. Then, descending down further, you have the rhythm of your bowels. You have the metabolic rhythm, the basal metabolic rate, and you have sexual rhythms. Women have the rhythm of menstruation. They have the rhythm of menopause. Men also have sexual rhythms, more subtle, but they certainly do exist, appear to operate on a 25-day cycle. We have biorhythms. There are all these rhythms that compose the human being, and each of them individually is a demonstration of the principle of sattva. But a wonderful thing to consider is that sattva, more comprehensively, is the action of cosmic rhythm that really coordinates and synchronizes all of these other rhythms in your body. And as long as they are all coordinated and synchronized, or orchestrated, if you will, into a synergy, you have tonality, you have health. Now, it's possible that one of your rhythms may go out of whack. Your bowel rhythm may go out of whack. You may be constipated. Your heart rhythm may go out of whack. You may occasionally have arrhythmia. But because rhythm pervades the entire system of rhythmic processes and holds it together, because sattva pervades, the system will restore itself. It will restore that unit of rhythm that has gone out of sync. It will bring it back into sync with the totality of the rhythms of the system. And the same thing is true in nature. What has happened, however, and this has been particularly, I won't say it's a recent development. Humanity has been moving out of sync with the natural world for a long, long time. I mean, let's face it. But let's consider when the process of the human species becoming disharmonious with the rhythms of the natural world began to go critical, when it began to become initially dystropic. And that would have been around the middle of the 18th century, 1750s or so, in the early part of the Industrial Revolution. Remember, speaking in terms of European history, which has driven a lot of global events, of course, the Enlightenment can be dated to 1650. And coming out of the period of the Enlightenment, because of the nature of the Enlightenment and the revalorization of science and the rational mind and the empirical method, the immediate effect is the industrialization of the world, starting in England. And from that point on, 1750, 1850, 1950, up until the 21st century, you see the evidence of a massive escalation of dystropic events. And the result is that humanity, the human species in its behavioral habits, in the way it creates society, in the way it creates culture, in the way it communicates amongst its members, goes into disintegration, derangement, and into a catastrophic breakdown. And we are currently living in the culminating stage of this catastrophic breakdown. We are living in the culminating stage of this dystropic disorder. And the mark of this disorder, the marks of it are several. Desacralization, as it has been called by scholars of religion. That is to say, humanity has lost the sense of what is sacred. What is sacred? Simple. Sacred means what is powerful. More powerful than you, more powerful than me, more powerful than us together, more powerful than any nation, more powerful than the Illuminati, and more powerful than the entire human species. And what is that? It is the planet which is the source of the life of the species. So, the sacred is that power greater than you that gives you life and supports your life. Desacralization means that humanity has lost all sense of contact with that power and has gotten out of phase with it. The alienation from the natural world is followed by the alienation within society and the many forms of alienation that cause human beings to become locked in their single self-identity. So these are signatures of this catastrophic, dystropic escalation. And I'd have you note that the situation turned critical, that is also the moment reckoned in linear historical time when the Aeon Sophia began to wake in her lucid dream. That would be about 1750. And her first identical node or dream persona emerged at the time of the French Revolution in the literary imagination of a certain French author named de Sade. So, such is the history of our alienation from nature and of the chaos in which we find ourselves today when everything is out of sync, everything is out of whack. It's not just the human species being no longer in harmony with nature. Even the parts of nature are no longer in harmony with themselves. And so birds fall out of the sky, the fish wash up on the shores. You know. To a large extent, it is, well, from our perspective, from the perspective of the GNE and the Sophianic Vision story, it is certainly due to the actions of the human species that this massive wave of dystopia has spread across the planet. So we are directly responsible in large measure, although not entirely, for these dystopic events. So what is happening now in these 3 years when Sophia establishes the initial conditions of her correction? What can you observe in the world around you, particularly in the natural world, that would indicate what? A reversal of this condition? A restoration to harmony with nature? And a restoration of harmony within nature? Within the countless cycles, life cycles, and instinctual programs, and atmospheric and geological processes, you know, a synchronization and a return to a healthful, salubrious synergy in all those things. That's a pretty immense task, isn't it? So it wouldn't be surprising to consider that although Sophia sets the initial conditions for that resynchronization, in 3 years, it takes her a little over 200 years to achieve it. Now remember, 200 years in human time is about 11 minutes of her time. So she sets the initial conditions of correction as an aeon in 10 seconds of her time and completes the process in the following 10 or 11 minutes. And that culminates, that process of correction culminates in the year 2216 by linear time reckoning according to the conventional calendar. So here's the picture. You have a dystropic events, you have syntropic events. The Aeon Sophia is currently laying the foundation for the syntropic events that will bring the entire planet back into harmony as an organism, as a healed and restored organism, with the human species included in that healing. This is the best summation I can give you of her designs and intentions in correction, the best general summation. Now, we can observe this. It is a challenge and adventure to observe how she's going to do this. And I ask you, given the picture that I've presented so far, what would you expect to see? What are you going to be looking for? You know, syntax is really important to the human animal because syntax, which is simply an operative description, aims the faculty of observation to see what it can see. If you go on a field trip with a botanist and you observe plants and flowers along the way, you are not going to observe nearly as much as the botanist does. Why not? Because the botanist has an operative description and knows what to look for. Now you have an operative description of Sophia's correction proceeding through 2 centuries. And do you know what to look for? Well, of course you do. You're going to look for how she introduces the syntropic events that lead to the ultimate and final and culminating correction. And I think I don't have to make a point about this. If it isn't obvious, if it isn't self-evident, it should be that she proceeds to bring forth the syntropic adjustments in the midst of the dystrophic catastrophe. Both things happen at the same time. So, given that descriptive syntax, what can you members of the GNE observe? You can observe the continuing dystrophic events, but at the same time introduce another level of perception so that you see 2 things at once. And you see how she begins to introduce the syntropic events once her initial conditions, which are perfect conditions, may I remind you, because she is an aeon, perfect conditions within the scale and scope of her dreaming, perfect conditions and nothing less. Once she sets these perfect initial conditions, that set of conditions becomes the strange attractor, which then generates the larger events of correction. And you and I, in this experiment, are uniquely positioned to observe exactly how she does that. Now, so far in proposing this descriptive language or syntax, operative language, syntax, I've used the word synchronization quite a bit. So she's going to synchronize the cycles of nature into a higher harmony. She's going to synchronize the life of the Anthropos itself, the life cycles of the Anthropos, both individually and collectively, into an orchestration of beauty and magic and of sublime resonance reflecting the cosmic order from which this experiment is derived. That's exactly what she's going to do, isn't it? And so the terms that come to mind, additional to synchronization, are synergy and syntropia. Okay, syntropic event, synergistic event, holistic orchestration of diverse cycles of life. This is the syntax that is floating around in our minds to be used to sharpen our observations of what is actually taking place right here on the planet. But you'll note that in the titling this briefing, I've used another word, syncopation. And it's interesting to look at what syncopation actually is. Maybe some of you know, but I didn't actually know. When I decided to call this briefing Gaian syncopation, I didn't know what syncopation actually is. I had a vague idea. So I looked it up, and this is what it says. In music, a shift of accent in a passage or composition that occurs when a normally weak beat is stressed. Second definition, something such as rhythm that is syncopated. So a syncopated rhythm in music or in dance is a rhythm in which a normally weak beat comes to be stressed. That's syncopation. I find that totally remarkable, because up until about 2 hours ago, for the entirety of my life, if you had asked me to define syncopation in that way, which is the cogent and accurate definition, I couldn't have done it. Everything in planetary tantra is current and happens in real time. So here it is, and now I'm going to say that according to the designs and purposes of the Wisdom Goddess, as far as my mind and faculties allow me to understand them, she intends to achieve the consummate synchronization of all processes on this planet by syncopation. Synchronization by syncopation. In other words, synchronization is both the overall or global method and the final result, but the actual technique she's going to use, the tool or technique to achieve that massive orchestrated harmony, is syncopation, which is to say that she is going to work from stress on the weaker beat. Stress on the weaker beat.
this is really a fascinating syntax. I repeat, in music, syncopation is a shift of accent in a passage or composition that occurs when a normally weak beat is stressed.
So with this syntax floating in your mind, you, like me, can ask the question that naturally arises. Well, what is this weaker beat, or what are those weaker beats that she intends to stress? And how does she intend to stress them, right? Well, I love this syntax, and I love the musical reference as well, because it's so suggestive of a beautiful musical swan deva-like resolution to the nightmare of the human condition, isn't it? Now we can consider what is the lesser beat, what are the lesser beats that she will use in this syncopation, and I leave that to you. A most fruitful exercise. I will just contribute one element to that exercise. I will contribute my 2 cents worth, my input. When I look at the world around me today and the condition that the world is in, I also observe the way that human animals respond to that condition, obviously. So, no matter where I go, whether it be in a little Spanish town like Ronda, lovely little Spanish town, whether I go down to the coast to Marbella, whether I go to some city like London or Amsterdam or Paris, I not only observe the flagrant evidence of dystropic disintegration of society in every conceivable aspect, but I also cast an eye upon those human animals wandering around in this Kali Yuga rampage of destruction, and squint my eyes a little bit, turn my head a little bit to the side, and ask myself, how are they handling it? How are they responding to it? What I find is that in the vast mass majority of cases, they're not handling it, and they're not responding to it, and they're not displaying, although they may be under great duress or great strain because of the breakdown of the system, they are not really displaying a sense of solution to the system. To put it more simply, I would say that these human animals find themselves in a state of great social disorder, economic, moral disorder, and yet they're oblivious to the loss of order, or to the idea that order could be recovered. And so my observation is that the major beat is oblivion, marching to oblivion, marching like lemmings over the cliff. The major beat to which the human herd is marching is completely oblivious to the notion that we have completely lost our rhythm in the grand scheme of cosmic order, and that I would say that if you don't know that you've lost something, how in the hell are you ever even going to begin to consider how to recover it? So to me, the major beat is no recovery and no solution in the minds of most human animals. But the minor beat, well, that's a different story. I'm part of the minor beat. You who are listening to me, who are listening to this recording, are part of the minor beat. And what separates you from those
who carry the major beat, well, it's simple. You realize that we are in a dangerous state of disorder, and that you yourself are subject to disorder. No one can, to this disorder, no one can escape it. But you hold the lesser beat because you hold the resolution to reordering, to recovery of the harmony, to recovery of a living, ecstatic bond with nature, to recovery of polyamorous delight with each other, to recovery of the beautiful biodiversity of all species and the bonding of all species into a sacred wholeness. And you know that order has been violated, and you hold the resolution to recover it. That is the lesser beat. And she achieves her syncopation by stressing the lesser beat. I'm sure you all will find these reflections stimulating, simply because the concept is so clear. When we introduced the notion of syncopation into the Gaia Navigation Experiment, well, it's a moment to feel gratitude toward Chinnamasta and to receive her glory that pours over you as I speak and over me. Hence, I do speak in this way. And in the flux of Chinnamasta's glory, I propose that she be called Mirita. Now, bear in mind that none of these Gaian Dakinis ever tell you their name. That is how they differ from channeled entities like Ramtha. Ramtha announces who he is to Jay-Z Knight. The Gaian Dakinis, the Diamond Sky Dakinis, and the Mahavidyas of the Shakti Cluster did not announce to the main Turtan their names. We name them according to the recognition that we can cultivate, the recognition that we can achieve of how the supernatural works in our own minds and lives, and we put the name on it. Now, I'm a comparative mythologist, and I got a lot of names floating around in my mind, from everything from Polynesian mythology to Siberian, Apache, Aztec, Inuit, Teutonic, Greco-Latin, African. I got a lot of names of a lot of gods and goddesses floating around in my mind. And so, if you will allow me to be the one to introduce these names, but that's not a final and absolute designation. You can call them whatever you like, as long as it's appropriate to the action, signature, and tonality of that devata. I propose to you to call Chinnamasta Mirita. And this is another step to shed the Sanskrit nomenclature that came with the initial syntax of the Terma of Gaia Awakening, okay? I said at the beginning, it's only provisional. Like Socrates said, let's just adopt some provisional terms. I'm saying, let's just adopt these provisional names. It's somewhat helpful and instructive to draw from the Hindu or Dravidian, that is, Southern Indian, or Tibetan Buddhist perspectives. It's somewhat helpful as a way of orienting to these sublime and supernatural powers that are all emanations and modalities of the planetary animal mother. What then is the provenance of the word Mirita? You pronounce it like the word miracle, Mirita. Well, the second part of that word is a pickup from Sanskrit. In Vedic religion, the word Rita means that which is properly joined, order, rule, or truth. And it is defined as the principle of natural order which regulates and coordinates the operation of the universe and everything within it. This term, Rita, meaning cosmic order, if you will, to put it fast and simple, occurs in the Vedas and is one of the prominent concepts of the Vedas. And it is closely related to the idea of Dharma, that is to say, what ought to be done and what ought not to be done in any particular situation. You determine how you ought to act as a human animal based on your sense of Rita, of your sense of participation in Rita, which is the cosmic order. It says here on the internet entry that one Sanskrit scholar says that Rita is one of the most important religious concepts of the Rig Veda. And from the point of view of the history of religious ideas, we may, in fact, we must begin the history of Hindu religion with this conception. Now, that's pretty strong language, isn't it? Well, of course, it is found in the Vedas, and it is found in all the Hindu and Asian teachings, and it is, of course, found in the Egyptian system of ethics, where it is called Maat, M-A-A-T, and Maat is represented by a goddess with a feather vertically balanced upright upon her head. And in the scene of judgment, in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the deceased appears before the judges in the afterworld to have his or her heart weighed against the feather of Maat. So here we go. I mean, what beautiful territory do we find ourselves in at this moment, Mimetis? Through the glory of Merita, you are instructed to bring your attention to one of the most sublime foundational principles that human consciousness has ever conceived, the principle of cosmic order. But it's not just an abstract principle, is it? Because through the Terma of Gaia Awakening and Planetary Tantra, it is possible to enter deep into that order. And this is the wish of Chinnamasta, a.k.a. Merita, whose name incorporates the ancient word for cosmic order. She oversees the process that coordinates the consciousness of human animals with the 2-century-long synchronization process of the Wisdom Goddess. Just imagine that. Just wrap your mind around this for a moment. In the previous briefing, I explained how Merita presents 2 kinds of instructions. One is the general, generic, or open instruction for humanity at large, if you will. I don't like to use that term because it's too vast and it's really meaningless. But let's say this is the instruction for the tribes and communities who gather in the spirit of correction and who share the intention and resolutions of the Wisdom Goddess toward correction, okay? So for those families, tribes, and communities, Merita presents a tool, that is to say, the seasonal calendar with the changed initial moments of the 4 seasons and the lunar calendar within that cyclic framework. And that's it. Take that calendar up, but take it up physically. I advise you to take it up, take it in hand. Draw calendars. Draw the calendar for the year 2013 on a large sheet of paper or on several sheets of paper and enter into it by hand the new initial seasonal days. May 1st, the first day of summer. August 1st, first day of fall. And then interpolate or intercalate within those seasonal cycles, which have no beginning. There's no new year in your calendar, okay? Interpolate
the lunar cycles. That's all you have to know. For instance, all you have to know about this current year is that the first day of summer in the year 2013 happened on day 21 of the Chinnamasta shift. That's all you have to know. Now, I would have you bear something in mind, getting back again to the marvelous spontaneity of planetary tantra and the process of living in the moment and discovering and learning in the moment in real time and discovering and learning at a genius level when your first and second attentions are coordinated. Just let me give you a concrete example. I recorded and sent out the talk on Chinnamasta's glory just a day ago. Here is the companion talk, you could say, on the 2nd of May. And these two talks both come to you at the moment of the first day of summer, don't they? But the moment of the first day of summer in this particular year, 2013, is also the moment of the 21st day of the Chinnamasta shift. Now, what happens on the 21st day of every shift? Well, I was up this morning, really, really early, and I stepped out under the night sky and looked toward the east about 3 hours before the sun came up, and what did I see? A perfect half moon. Now, that is the half moon of the left hand. So you hold up your left hand in front of you and curve your forefinger and your thumb into a crescent. And that is where the crescent appears. That is how the crescent appears. This is the crescent of the left hand. Whereas when you look at the crescent that appears after sunset in the west, that is the crescent of the right hand. What is the crescent of the left hand, which appears before sunrise, called? What do we call it? We call it the hinge. And what does the instruction of planetary tantra tell you about the hinge? That is the moment of solution. Now, I wouldn't even call this coincidence. I wouldn't even say that it's a coincidence that in my entire life of 60 plus years, with all the studies that I've done, including the studies of music and musical theory, that I could not define syncopation until the day of the Chinnamasta hinge of 2013. It's so cut like diamond, right to the edge of eternity, which is the eternal now. That is how time is fashioned in the minds of the aeons. Cut like a diamond. And your consciousness, what you call your consciousness, is what glints in the facets of that diamond. The diamond of the mysterious power of time. Recall that the 10 Mahavidyas, including Chinnamasta or Mirita, are considered to be emanations of Kali. So there are 9 emanations of Kali and Kali herself, right? Those are the Mahavidyas incorporated into the Shakti cluster. And each of those 9 emanations of Kali is an aspect of the mystery of time, because time is Kali's great mystery. She is the mistress of time, but she lends her power to Mirita in this specific instance of Sophia's correction. And it is Chinnamasta's glory to receive that power and to guide humanity into a new sense of time and into a new calendric and seasonal harmony with the mother planet. Now, I did a little research on Jose Arguelles. You remember him, the Mayan factor. He goes back to the idea of the harmonic convergence. And among the various things that Arguelles taught and propounded in his life, well, I can't say that I followed them very closely, but I do know that he was passionate about restoring human behavior and society to the 13 moon lunar calendar. And you might, some of you, if you're so inclined, might want to go and read about Arguelles' calendar and his proposals. And who knows, maybe he based his calendar on the Aztec system, which is a 13 by 20 system, 20-day months, 13 20-day months, something like that. So I guess in that respect, it's not going to match or merge with the Dakini shift calendar, which uses the actual synodic months, the period of synodic months. In any case, there might be something to be learned from delving into Arguelles' proposal, okay? But I did note somewhere, I can't give you the exact details, that at the time that he proposed this, which began way back in 1986, in August of 1986, at the time of the so-called harmonic convergence, he proposed that there would be a moment in the future when humanity ought to adapt this calendar and get off the solar calendar system, which is completely bogus and fraudulent and tremendously irritating. And he, as it were, designated an initial moment. And I believe he designated something like a moment, a day in July 2006 or something like this. I can't remember. Go find it. And he said, well, this is the moment, this is the day to convert. The whole world should convert to the Aztec 20-month, 13-moon calendar on that day, and that didn't happen. That's an interesting little anecdote because, of course, it raises the question, well, on what day would it be the right day for humanity to accept or to adopt or to convert to the calendaric system that comes from the instruction of Mirita? Well, you recall that I gave you part of my encounter with Mirita, which unfolded in the very first moments of the Chinnamasta shift. And I said that she taught me or showed me in the clairaudient download, which was like grease lightning through the ears of a cricket, that there was a second aspect to the calendric conversion to go along with Sophia's correction. But that second aspect had to be worked out by the present-day Teleste, those initiates who were intimate with the cycles of time, as the seers of the mysteries were intimate with the cycle of precession of 26,000 years, intimate with cosmic timing. And they would be then charged, according to the overseeing of Mirita, to determine the initial date. And she showed me how to do it. And I'm doing it. And I would love to show you how to do it. And I assure you, as I said before, this is Mickey Mouse simple. When you see how I do it, it's Mickey Mouse simple. It may be somewhat daunting and off-putting, I know, because down through the years I've observed that these matters are arcane. And for some reason, although they appear very simple to me, they really cause trouble to some people. So if you want to follow that, I will put it down in writing in the next crew notes along with an audio commentary for your edification and for your delight. Just a little sound effect there. I'm chewing on an apple. Now, this is exactly the 1 hour point of NAB briefing 62. And I'd like to close the briefing, as usual, in a 10 or 15 minute segment, by returning to the image of the bull and of the stars at the tip of the northern and southern horn. Let's remember that the bull displays or represents the power of divine imagination. And that is the power that you worship if you are a Shakta, because it is the power of the earth goddess. Now, the power of divine imagination surges and seethes through the entire universe. But in certain worlds, it does not manifest itself through an immense bias toward the feminine polarity of aeonic power. So there is such a thing as masculine divine imagination. And there is such a thing as neutral divine imagination. And there is even such a thing as inorganic, non-aeonic divine imagination. But this experiment and planetary tantra are profoundly seated in the conditions of our Earth existence. And in the conditions of our Earth existence, the constellation of the bull represents the supreme power of the Earth goddess. And so, the two currents proceeding from the head of the bull, to be pictured as horns, represent the masculine and feminine polarities of the divine imagination of Shakti, and that is female power. So, in terms of divine or aeonic force, it is feminine. So, let's review. The lower horn represents the current that I've called the AC current, or alternating current, and that is the reproductive drive, quite simple. Well, we call it AC because no reproduction happens in the meiotic frame unless there is an alternating current back and forth between a male and a female animal. And we know that there are very special conditions that pertain, which have resulted in the human species falling into meiotic reproduction. So that drive to reproduce and to propagate is actually an expression of the divine imagination of the wisdom goddess. It's not just a biological drive. The biology is a demonstration of her dreaming. It is a natural effect of a supernatural force, if you will. Now, we look at the northern horn, and we see that that represents a kind of current called the DC current, or the male polarity of the female divine imagination. So you have the female polarity of the feminine divine imagination, Shakti, and the male. And that DC current I've called the killing drive. Now, it's going to take some close scrutiny, and I advise you, a high degree of sobriety and equanimity, not to mention some good old-fashioned detachment, in order to be able to look clearly at what is the killing drive. And I have only begun to give you the operative language in this respect. First of all, just let me say, without further elaboration in this briefing, that the killing drive is not to be confused with what I have called the D-force. The D-force comes from the sun. It is a cosmic force that comes from the sun to the earth. And Castaneda called it the tumbler. Okay? The D-force is not the killing force.
If you want to put labels to the northern and southern horns, attach Thanatos to the north and Eros to the southern horn, closely connected to the Crab Nebula, the Aeon Christos, and the Symbiont. Okay. So what is the killing drive specifically? The killing drive is evident in a couple of ways which are self-evident. They are flagrantly obvious. It is evident in predation. But in predation, the killing drive is subordinated to survival in the food chain. So, animals kill other animals in order to eat them. That is the demonstration of the killing drive in the food chain in the planetary habitat we inhabit. However, there is a second application of the killing drive, and that is to eliminate that which threatens life. You can see that that's not actually predation. If a herd of wildebeest attack a lion and kill a lion, as may occasionally happen, or mortally wound a lion, they are not practicing predation. The wildebeest are not practicing predation because they don't prey on lions. They are practicing elimination of that which threatens their survival. And that is another expression or direction of the killing drive. So I advise you to really sharpen your definition of what it is we're talking about here. And I myself will continue to sharpen it as the discussion and investigation proceeds. But just to conclude this briefing, let me direct your attention back to the star at the root of those two drives, Aldebaran. Now, is there a question forming in your mind? Would it be something like this? Well, if the southern star, Sharatan, can be identified in nature, if the feminine polarity of divine imagination expresses itself in nature, and we can see how, and if the northern star, Elnat, representing the masculine polarity of divine imagination, also expresses itself in nature, not only in the natural world around us, but in the human world, then what about Aldebaran at the root of those two drives? What aspect of the divine imagination of the Aeon Sophia can be identified by Aldebaran? And what is the biological process, the natural or biological process, instrumental to that third factor? So in addition to the masculine polarity and the feminine polarity, there's a third factor of her divine aeonic power of Epinoia. And what would that be? What do you think that would be? And how would that supernatural power, based in the Nahual of the Wisdom Goddess, come to expression in some kind of natural event, in some kind of natural streaming? Remember, the reproductive drive, the AC current, produces a natural streaming of behavior, doesn't it? And the killing drive, likewise, produces a natural streaming of behavior. So, what natural streaming of behavior does the third force produce? And what is the third force?
Well, obviously, if we read the cosmic code, it is at the root of the power of the bull. It is not even a current that comes from the horn tips. It comes from the forehead of the bull, from the eye. And if you read the cosmic display, that root power in the seeing of the bull is stronger and more dominant than the other two powers represented by the stars at the horn tips. So what is that power, that third force of her divine imagination? You can call it the power of narrative, the power of narrating a plot or story. And what in the world would be the biological expression of such power? Which is really the root of her dreaming, isn't it? Because even in her dreaming, she's dreaming a story. She's been dreaming for a long time on this planet. She dreamt for billions of years before humanity even started to appear and dance around the planet. And for the last 250 or so years, she's been in a lucid dream. So she's dreaming, and her dream has a plot. Her dream is a narrative. And she dreams by the power of that central and third force. But what is the biological expression of that power? Well, my friends, that is what has been called, down through the ages, with much confusion, the process of reincarnation. You see, reincarnation is a drive. It is the expression of a drive, just as much as reproduction of species is the expression of a drive, and just as much as predation in the food chain or elimination of predators are drives. In fact, it is a far more powerful drive than either of those two, because it is the drive that arises in the heart of an aeon from the love of its own dreaming power and from the love of what it dreams. In loving what she dreams, which is you and me in this room making this recording, you listening to me, in loving what she dreams, she brings forth that third power, and its biological and natural expression is a process that has been called reincarnation. The subject or theme of reincarnation is therefore entered into the GNE formally on this day under the hinge of Mirita in May of 2013. And you can look forward to continued investigation of this topic in the 60 series of NAV briefings.